to the Cowboys, who in week four finally did what everyone who isn't Jason Garrett was hoping they would do, give Zeke the ball. The third year back recorded a season-high 25 rushing attempts last week. Cowboys are now 8-1 when Zeke receives 25-plus carries in his career. Here's what he had to say about his workload yesterday.
I was banged up, but, I mean, it's football. That's what it is. I'm young. I got fresh legs, and I'm going to get the ball as much as I can. Everything that we accomplished last Sunday, last week, it really means nothing if we don't come out and repeat it or bid on it and get better next week. So, I mean, we just got to look at what we did last Sunday and fix what we did wrong and praise ourselves for what we did well. But we can't be content with that. We got to do that week in and week out if we want to be a good team in this league.
Chris Kenny, you were one of the people saying it. If this is how the Cowboys are going to win, they're going to have to go through their best player, and they did. How do Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys offense now match up against this Texans defense on Sunday?
Well, I think they match up well because they're going to run the football. And you look at that Texans defense, it's a shell of its former self. They're not playing at the level that we thought that they would be coming into this season when you think about the additions plus the guys coming back healthy. But when you look at this Dallas Cowboys team, we've been begging for them to get Ezekiel Elliott the ball, not only the 25 rush attempts, but also the 4 touches in the passing game, 29 total touches for 240 yards. I mean, that's the impact that Zeke has on that offense, being able to make that play in the passing game late that set up that score where they could actually put that game on ice against the Lions. You need Ezekiel Elliott to go out there and be that difference maker. Nick, you always talk about force multipliers. Ezekiel Elliott is the only guy on that Cowboys offense that the opposing defense has to game plan for. He's the only guy. So you've got to be able to, if you're the Cowboys, find a way to get him the ball in situations where he can make people miss and do what he does best, which is keep the chains moving, being able to sustain drives, and then hopefully being able to score once you get in the red zone. I don't trust Dak Prescott as a volume passer. I think that's shown through the first 4 weeks of the season. He has not evolved the way that we thought he would.
Well, that's good because he has no one to throw
the ball to. Here's the thing. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but even in one-on-one situations,
right,
Dak has not done a great job of getting the receivers the ball, particularly outside the numbers down the field. But one thing I can trust with this offense is that Ezekiel Elliott, when he has the ball in his hands, can make something happen.
And I fully agree with that. Coaching staff's just going to have to go against some of your most natural football instincts, which are, oh, the other team's got 8 in the box. The other team is daring me to throw the football. The other team has me in single high safety, man-to-man, the whole game. Still run the ball. Do not stop running the ball until the Texans show you they can stop you running the ball. Because when they're watching film this week, you know what they're going to see against the Houston Texans? Every quarterback lighting them up. Mm-hmm. They're going to see the Houston Texans pass defense not make a single play, allow 11 touchdowns, only make one pick. A 115 quarterback rating allowed by this Texans defense. So coach and staff might be thinking, you know, this could be a game.
Fight it.
This could be a game that Dak's coming off his best game. We need to get our wide receivers some confidence. It's national television Sunday night. No. Just keep handing
Stick
Zeke the football. Like that, give your best player the ball as many times as possible until the other team shows they can stop it.
And don't get consumed with the rest of the NFL. This 2018, like, we know it's going to be a special year, especially offensively. We know a huge emphasis as far as rushing the passer, falling on the quarterback, so they're trying to take care of the offense. They've changed the rules as far as catching the football. They make it easier. You don't have to survive the ground. Well, to me, that's stupid. You're playing on the ground. Like, that's the thing. That's the playing surface. But, yeah, Raj, I know. Yeah, NFL, I understand. Yeah, I'm with you guys. Yeah. Good job. Yeah. So the Dallas Cowboys, their struggle is what everyone else is thriving at doing. So, man, you have to fight that feeling. You're going to look at a lot of film in the Texans secondary. You're going to be like, man, these dudes are not a threat. Mm. Like, we're getting ready to pass the ball outside. We're getting ready to march up and down. But you need to fight that feeling that Nick's telling you, because your path to victory is playing great defense, turning them over, which they can get after Deshaun Watson.
Yes.
Force some turnovers, that bad offensive line that they have, and run the football. That's every game that they have. That's the Dallas Cowboys recipe to trying to win. And now going against this Texans team, that their defense, they got some serious problems. You got to be able to force their secondary later in the game. After you've run it, then you try to put them away with the passing game in Dallas. I believe that's the best way for them on Sunday.
You mentioned it earlier that they did try to get him more in a pass-catching role, Zeke. Do we see more of that on Sunday?
Well, I think they're going to have to be creative in terms of making sure he gets the volume of touches that he needs in order to impact the game. And sometimes that's going to mean swing passes out of the backfield, being able to run wheel routes and throw him the ball when he's got favorable matchups. Those types of things I think they've got to implement more in their offense. And we heard Ezekiel Elliott talk about that in the preseason, wanting to be more of a receiving threat out of the backfield. I don't care how they get him the ball. They just got to get the ball in his hands because he's the only guy that can be a difference maker for him. And you looked at that Texans defense a few weeks ago against a Giants offense that can't run the ball consistently, and they ran the ball consistently against the Texans. So I think this is a favorable matchup with that offensive line of the Dallas Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott. They can get on track. They've got to stick to the script, though, like Nick said, run the football. Even when you got 8 and 9 man fronts, run the football. Because guess what? You got a talented running back that can make people miss. Even if you got an unblocked defender in the box, he can still make somebody miss and gain positive yards.
But from a creative standpoint, Jenna, you are right. They need to be able to graduate from elementary things and put Zeke in a little more sophisticated passing. And that is up to Jason Garrett, and that's up to Scott Linehan. If they don't do that, then they're at fault for doing that. So we've seen Zeke. It's just like anything else. You give young kids an assignment to do. Once they get that right, man, you grow their assignment. You grow them from that. Like, we know Zeke. Zeke said after the game, yeah, we did this in practice a few times, but they ain't really throw me the ball. I ain't know if they was going to do it. But you can see Zeke. Zeke has such acceleration off the line of scrimmage. In that route last week, that linebacker did not have a chance. His release was nice and tight off the line, and he escaped him because he can run. Grow him in the passing game, and I believe that's what Dallas and that's what we should see out of them against the Texans D.
Chris, thanks for hanging out with us today. Much appreciated. Got to take a break. Coming up, is LeBron still the best player in the NBA? We discuss that next on First Things First. Welcome back. We'll get to Zeke in just a second, but first, NBA preseason, Bucks, Bulls, Giannis, the Greek Freak, gets the rebound all the way to the other side and puts it back in.
He doesn't even really explode off the ground there.
No.
It's just so
just very cavalier. Took 4 bounces from half court.
Yeah.
Wasn't rushed or anything.
No. The guy.
Watch this. Watch this pass half court. Count the bounces, Nick. One, two, three.
Just
bam.
Three, actually.
Like.
Three, and then just goes up, man. He's going to hold the crown at some point, see?
Best player in the world.
All right, more from this game.
Maybe
Brooke
they'll
Lopez.
Let him into that little restaurant in Milwaukee then.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Over Jabari Parker. What a way to welcome Parker back to Milwaukee.
Look at Brooke Lopez. Brooke Lopez could be important for them this year, man. A little stretch five. It didn't work out for him in L.A.
Yeah. That's an intriguing pickup, especially when you know you got Joel Embiid in the East to deal with.
All right, finally, some high school football in Virginia Eastside. Grayson Whited with an incredible catch.
Oh, let me see this.
Now, this is
again.
Nifty here now. This might be one of the more difficult catches I've ever seen. Guy does a 360. Okay. Now, you know he's an athlete. I'm trying to get my staff just to be able to walk and chew a little more bubble gum. My man right there run down the middle of the field.
See, you told me to start looking in the background of those videos. You know what I saw back there?
School buses.
2 scouts from the New England Patriots.
Ah.
Man, you need to stop. On
to the Cowboys.
Kids got short area quickness, for real.
The Cowboys in week 4 finally did what everyone who isn't called Jason Garrett was hoping they would, give Zeke the ball. The third year back recorded a season high 25 rushing attempts last week. Cowboys are 8-1 when Zeke receives 25-plus carries in his career. Here's what he had to say about his workload yesterday.
I was banged up, but, it's football. That's what it is. I'm young. I got fresh legs, and I'm going to get the ball as much as I can. Everything that we accomplished last Sunday, last week, it really means nothing if we don't come out and repeat it or bid on it and get better next week. So, we just got to we got to look at what we did last Sunday and fix what we did wrong and praise ourselves for what we did well. But we can't be content with that. We got to do that week in and week out if we want to be a good team in this league.
Well, CC, conventional wisdom would say that it worked for the Cowboys last week and they would most likely do it again, give the ball to Ezekiel Elliott and let him go. How do Zeke and the Cowboys match up against the Texans' defense?
The Cowboys match up well against them, but it's still – I like the fact that Zeke is going to get the ball, and This is probably going to be the most redundant point that we're going to have in this show for the next 6 months. And it's dominated the show the last 6 months. They just don't have no wide receivers. Like, they don't have a big play threat, so they got to go to Zeke. So you got to be able to bring all those people in the box. Now, they're going to have good matchups on the outside. I believe Dak will start to be able to gain confidence. That win last week was a huge win, not only for the Cowboys, but for their quarterback and his overall psyche. You can only struggle in this league so much. We talked about this, well documented. We're an all-time high as far as throwing. We got three quarterbacks, right, Nick, on pace.
Well, four.
Four.
One of them got benched because Fitzpatrick's one of them. Yeah. So you got three starters left on pace to break the all-time single-season passing record.
And the Dallas Cowboys, they do have the best pure runner in Ezekiel Elliott. Now, that's not going to take anything away from Todd Gurley, but if you had 20 carries to give the one running back, it would be Ezekiel Elliott.
If you weren't allowed to throw to your running back, Zeke's the number one pick of all the running backs.
Yes.
In that regard.
He's a pure runner with the football. I mean, you see that head he's got on him. That dude is built for some carries. Like, I don't know, man. When he shows up at work, I would let him know. You can take all these weekdays off because on Sunday night, you're going to be carrying the ball 25 times at a minimum. The same way they built the Dallas Cowboys with Emmitt Smith. And they had Troy Aikman. They had Jay Novacek, Michael Irvin, Alvin Harper. They had more weapons, but everything still started with Emmitt. Everything should start in Dallas with Zeke, allowing some open throwing lanes on the outside. But we're going to keep harping on it. Man, they're wide receivers. They got to be able to make some plays. If not, they make football in this era where football is the easiest to throw it. They make it awful complicated with the best runner in football.
They are going to have to resist the devil on their shoulder in this game because the Texans have an awful pass defense. Everyone is having success throwing the ball against the Texans. Quarterbacks against the Texans this year, 11 touchdowns to one pick and a 115 rating. Even in today's era, those are exorbitant numbers. And so you're going to be playing a team that you know has a bad pass defense, no matter the situation. That team is going to be daring you to pass on them. They are going to be stuffing the box. They are going to be loading eight guys in the box. And so you know they're bad at pass defense. You know they're leaving their under-talented corners on islands, and you still got to run the football. You still have to prove, you have to make the Texans prove they can stop you doing that. But, man, that's hard. It's hard. And this is what I think was working against the Cowboys the first few weeks of the year. And it didn't, from afar, it didn't make sense. How could you only give Zeke 16, an average of 16 carries a game? Why would you not give the ball to your best player? Man, you are taught in all sports, but football in particular, take what the defense gives you. If the defense is dictating, we talk all the time about the Patriots being looking at what the defense is saying will allow and taking advantage of that.
Yes.
And teams were almost tricking the Cowboys. They're like, hey, we're going to make it so obvious that you should pass that not passing would be ridiculous. And the Cowboys couldn't help themselves. In week four, they could, and they had far and away their best passing and rushing game of the year. The Texans going to do that. Texans are going to have they're going to have Honey Badger down in the box.
Yes.
They're going to be saying, you know what? If you can beat our corners, good luck. And the Cowboys have to go into the game saying, we don't even care to beat your corners until you show us you can stop Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, one thing that I would watch out for, especially as far as the Texans are concerned, last week I would say would probably be the best football I've seen between J.J. Watt and Clowney combined at the same time. J.J. Watt, 5 sacks total for the season.
2 last week.
Clowney also contributed 2 sacks in last week's game. So what the Texans are going to try to do is make them one-dimensional, try to make them throw the ball. And this offensive line that has a couple holes in it, they're going to have to earn their money because the Texans are going to be coming after Dak. Even though they give up yards and stuff as far as the passing game, Cowboys got to score some points early and be able to try to keep some type of balance because you don't want to get in predictable passing situations the way J.J. Watt and Clowney are rushing a quarterback.
Don't we already know that the Cowboys' offense is one-dimensional? They don't have any other options, seemingly, at this point. Everyone seems to know that they're going to now go through Ezekiel Elliott. Isn't that like just giving them the answers before the game starts?
Sometimes, like, correct, but sometimes your guys are just better. Like, to use you as an example, like, I would imagine if you guys were playing in the fourth quarter of a game, down 4, and it's 3rd and 6, everyone knew.
Everyone.
They're going to run some basic route to Chris.
Yep, some option route.
An option route to Chris.
Yeah, I tell the guy, you can't win. I got three choices. Every choice you make is a bad choice. Everyone knows. Your mom know. Your wifey know. Your girlfriend, too. They all know. They're going to throw it to me. You getting ready to be on TV tonight. So, that's a little commentary. I'm sorry.
No, but so but
the play was over 5 minutes
yeah, so
already.
Sorry.
He's
no,
still talking.
I'm so sorry.
But that is why, and not to blow Chris up, but, like, that's why Chris has a gold jacket, and that's why Zeke has the talent to have one. I'm not giving him gold jacket after 2 years and four games, but he's that type of player.
Yes.
And so it's why those guys are so special. It's why you don't trade Khalil Mack. It's why when you have the number two pick of the draft, your GM says, man, we want to be a Hall of Fame caliber guy. The most dominant and special players in all of sports are guys that the other team knows it has to go through them. They spend all week saying, we're not going to let this guy beat us, and that guy still beat you. Right. That's what Zeke has to be for the Cowboys. Until something drastically changes in the passing game, which will probably be around 2019.
All right, time now for the player resume, sponsored by Indeed. The world's number one job site. The NLDS starts on Fox tonight between the Rockies and Brewers. And the player to watch is, who else? Christian Yelich. The likely NL MVP winner nearly won the Triple Crown this year with a .326 batting average, 36 home runs, and 110 RBI. The Rockies certainly have their hands full with Yelich, guys. Do you not agree?
Well, listen, see, you pointed out to me before the show that Yelich had a chance in game 162 to hit a three-run home run, had two men on base, and if he had hit it, he would have won the Triple Crown.
That's a lot of pressure.
And so instead, he just finished his first, second. But he had the best finishing push to a season since Bonds in 93. In their 8-game winning streak to win the division, .458, 5 home runs, 17 RBIs. If the Rockies are going to have any chance in the series, they have to cool him down.
I know he's on the wrong side of the plate, but there's nothing in baseball better than a left-hander who can hit the ball. I mean, when that's left-handed swing, it's so sweet. It's so sweet to be able to see. Yeah, I wish he was a right-handed. Or switch hitter, actually.
I thought Javi Baez was your MVP. And those last 10 days of the season, Yelich got it.
Very impressive, though.
Absolutely.
It's been fun to watch. All right, that'll be exciting. Coming up, can Kevin Durant save the Knicks? Take a break. Talk about that next on First Things First. On Saturday, we got a huge day of college football. First, it is the Red River Showdown between number 19 Texas and number 7 Oklahoma, followed by Indiana taking on third-ranked Ohio State. Coverage begins at 11 a.m. Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time now for us to go viral. Yesterday, we celebrated Nick's birthday by getting him his favorite thing in the world, a Chipotle burrito. No joke, that is his favorite thing in the world. But Rockets GM Daryl Morey got something just as valuable, a Carmelo Anthony highlight and a happy birthday tweet. Adorable.
The Melo highlight, if you see this, Melo's apologizing. Because he passes up a three for a long two. And even though he made it, he turns to the bench and says, my bad, guys.
Oh, yeah, I forgot
my
where
bad.
I am.
So Daryl sent us that during the show.
Analytics.
I try to keep my tats under wrap, guys.
Oh, my goodness. That's Jordan Clarkson. That's what Nick did.
No, Jordan Clarkson got the neck tats, man. I can't.
At least they got your beard and everything fresh, though, bro.
Mm-hmm. No.
They got you.
They finally used a real picture of me.
Calm down with the trying to muscle up and tat up.
What do you mean trying to muscle up?
Danielle just traded you in for him. Hey, Nick, you got
See,
to go.
You were able
that
to
dude
say
is
that.
Way more cool.
I
All right. Danielle said, in for a first round pick and consideration later. Holler at your player
it
to see him in the street.
It is one of the nicer pictures of Nick that we've seen.
That's a good
it's because it's a real picture.
Jamila
finally,
did that?
They didn't
Jamila?
Photoshop me. No, I just
Who
sent
did
it
that?
To him.
Jamila, great job.
It's from my phone.
All right, let's get some Jamila stories.
Jamila gave me a motivational speech.
Start your morning.
Let's do this.
The Yankees won their AL wild card game 7-2 over the A's. Great game to watch in full if you're doing an early morning sports show, which is why we are all exhausted. Aaron Judge hit a two-run home run in the bottom of the first to get things going. And then Giancarlo Stanton homered in the eighth inning in his first career playoff game. This was a great game. Yankees take on the Sox now in the ALDS. You could not write a better script. CC, you have faith in this Yankees team?
I got faith. I'm a Yankees fan. But what I really respected last night, Yankees fans, much respect. They were into the ball game from the first
yep.
pitch, it was electric there. Now, can they take those big bats into the postseason? Will it be supported by consistent pitching? That's the biggest question for my Yankees right now.
Obviously, when they signed Giancarlo Stanton before the year, or they traded for him, I should say, they had visions of this. Judge homers, Stanton homers, yeah. And we beat them that way. But the Yankees gambled throwing Severino out there in this game and saving Jay Happ for the Red Sox series when a lot of people thought they should have used him in this game. They got away with it. Severino pitched well enough through four innings. They pulled him in the fifth. Now they're set up well for that Red Sox series.
I understand why the manager decides to go with them because the A's are batting last in the major leagues, any pitcher that throws above 95 miles an hour.
So
that's why they
threw
Severino out.
Even though last year Severino couldn't get out of the first inning in that game.
Yeah,
on to the NFL now, where the Saints will happily welcome back Mark Ingram after his four-game suspension. Head coach Sean Payton was asked how Ingram looks after his absence, and he said, quote, he looks fine. I mean, he wasn't gone for a year and a half or cast away on an island. Nick Allen, how much of a boost will Ingram's return be for this?
Well, I'm glad to hear what Sean Payton said, because I had seen video that made it look like Mark Ingram was cast away on an island. He's running by himself on the beach.
On the beach, yeah. There it is right there. Yeah.
Their offense doesn't need too much of a boost. He will help balance, and he'll take some of the workload off Kamara. Mm-hmm. But if he can help them elongate possessions, it should give their defense a rest, which is what this team needs right now.
And the former Heisman Trophy winner, I spoke with him. He's trying to send a message to the league. You know, he's never done anything. He never took anything in his body and everything. Being suspended, he really wants to repair his reputation. Sean Payton, that organization, they're going to get him involved. I would suspect he touches the ball 18 times this weekend.
Okay.
Well, all right. Moving on. Chiefs wideout Tyreek Hill is excited to go up against Jaguars corner Jalen Ramsey. How do I know this? Well, Hill said that, quote, I'm always up for a challenge. The best always go against the best. Kansas City has the highest scoring offense in the NFL, while the Jags are allowing the fewest points. CeCe, what do you expect from Tyreek Hill against Jalen Ramsey in that Jags defense?
Oh, this is going to be a great matchup. I like Tyreek Hill. He's really improved as far as a route runner. You know, last week you could start to see some of the short passing game that they've added compared to being just a screen or a deep threat. Jalen, with the long arms, he's a long strider. You have to be careful playing bump run against Tyreek Hill because he can beat you so quick off the ball. If Jalen takes a chance or guesses, I believe this is one of the most intriguing matchups that we have, DB wide receiver of this weekend.
And as great as Jalen is, I don't think he can jam Tyreek Hill. I think it's too risky because he's so fast. This is a critically important game for both teams. If the Jags win this game, they leapfrog the Chiefs, not just in the standings because of the tiebreaker, but in everybody's power rankings, the best team in the AFC.
Yes.
If the Chiefs win, they're two games and the tiebreaker clear of Jags, and you can, even after 5 weeks, start talking about a potential bye in the playoffs.
And you do not want to go to Kansas City with them having home field advantage.
Right. All right, we end on Baker Mayfield. The good news is that he led the Browns to 42 points in his first ever NFL start. The bad news is that the Browns lost mainly because of his four turnovers. Here's what he had to say about those turnovers.
Obviously, the most important thing is taking care of the ball, no matter if it's, you know, communication, decision-making. The most important things in football, making sure we give our team the most opportunities to win, you know, chances to score, putting ourselves in good position. So that's the most important thing. We're very close. It just so happens that some of those little errors cost us the ball, on my part. So we're very close on it. And that's the positive outlook on it. Obviously disappointing to lose when we, you know, we can fix a couple things and come out with a win, but it didn't turn out that way, so we have to get it fixed.
All right, CeCe, the Browns host the Ravens this weekend. What's going to be the key for him not turning that ball over against that Ravens defense?
The thing about not turning the ball over as a young player, it's there's such an emphasis in NFL teams when you go inside the locker rooms, inside the meeting room, as far as whoever has the football, it's the prized possession of the NFL, taking care of that football. We talk about rushing the quarterback. We talking about sacking the quarterback. But NFL teams, when you're going around the building, you'll be shocked. There'll be five or six guys walking around with the football, people poking at them, trying to knock it out from behind. It's a point of emphasis. Ever since Tony Dungy, a number of years ago, started with the practicing, the strip sacks, and then Peanut Tillman and that group took it to a whole nother level. Ball protection in the NFL. Interceptions have always been a key. But right now, because we know, most teams are moving the football. But if you give a team an extra four possessions, like how are you going to be able to win that game? If there's one stat that I think has been more consistent in the NFL, it's about turnover margin. And when you start getting, did you win the turnover margin by one, two, three, and four, it becomes almost impossible to win games. Just the number one stat, I believe, in pro football is turnover margin. And Baker, I like the fact that this organization, they're not going to allow a young player to be like, oh, yeah, you know, a couple turnovers, they don't hurt. Yes, they do. And the reason why they lost this game was those couple turnovers in the second half that Baker was a part of.
And the listen, the ball security part, as far as not being strip sacked, is critical. And that is something that even as strong as he is and as big a hands as he has for his size, that's going to be something that could follow him through his career and he's got to be careful of. These interceptions, I got to make sure people understand what happened on these. He had two picks. One was a tipped pass that was to his receiver. The defender made a good close on it, batted the ball. And so you can put that partially on Baker, but it hit his receiver in the hand.
Sure.
The other pick was the final play of regulation. There's 14 seconds left. They are trying to desperately get in field goal range with no timeout. So if it's not picked, like they're going to. So the fumbles to me are a way bigger deal in this specific game than the interceptions, because neither interception was one that I'm like, wow, Baker made a bad read. Baker really blew it there. The one was tipped and the other was we desperately have to get the ball upfield in order to try to kick a game-winning field goal. Now, I'm leaning that way because I think this guy is so good. I don't want him to change how he's been throwing the football. I don't want him to change the windows he's trying to fit it into. Now, he can work
and
on the ball security.
And all of it.
I don't want him to change any of that because I think that is what makes him special right now.
No, that part is right. But also, you still have to understand your football team. This Cleveland Browns, Greg Williams, their defensive coordinator, man, they're creating turnovers. They're still plus seven as far as turnover margin, first in the National Football League. So one thing is not turn the ball over, but the other thing is to know your team. You're on a team. So that's creating more turnovers for you. So you're already pretty much going to win that battle. So you have to be extra careful because, man, you already got your path carved out to victory by winning that turnover margin.
Are you worried about him? Or was this one game?
No. The offensive line's shaky. He's going to have other games with turnovers. It's hard to say this after six quarters. Baker Mayfield's a star. I believe the Browns made the right pick. I think the Browns are going to continue to be in games on the strength of his right arm.
Yep. Take care of the ball in the pocket, though.
Okay. All right, let's talk some basketball. Kevin Durant, who has another year before he can hit free agency again, but according to all the buzz on the rumor mill, you would think he's looking for his next job right now. KD said he'll be transparent with his decision this time around. Yahoo's NBA reporter Chris Haynes was on Undisputed yesterday and addressed the question of Durant's next team. Take a listen to this.
New York Knicks have a very good shot at luring KD away from the Bay Area. Wow. The reason I say that is his business partner, Rich Kleiman, is based in New York. A huge New York Knicks fan. Mm-hmm. Their business is located and based in New York. Mm-hmm. KD's dad is a big New York Knicks fan. Okay. The same allure that LeBron had towards the Los Angeles Lakers, just the building, the culture. Same thing, the same way I know that KD feels about the Knicks.
Other things, he likes kangaroos. That starts with a K, and Knicks also start with a K. I mean, there's a long list, but we just stuck to those five. Nick, you buying that the Knicks could be a destination for KD?
Yes. This is why I've been saying this. I got to get better on television, man, because he said this on TV once, and it's news.
That's my prayer. I understand. I do my verse and everything.
He says this on TV once. I see it everywhere on the internet. I've been saying this for a month. Now, Chris Haynes, to his credit, is a very good reporter, and I think his words are going to carry more weight than mine. I get that as a reporter versus commentator. But I wasn't pulling it out of thin air. This is what NBA people have been talking about for quite some time, that Kevin Durant and another guy might end up 10 blocks from here, where we film this television show. Like, I will be consistent on this. Kevin Durant has not made up his mind. He does not know if he's leaving Golden State at all, and if he does, where he would go. But the Knicks have the ability, as soon as they move on from Joakim Noah, to add two guys. Mm-hmm. They already have Kristaps. And a Kevin Durant as your best guy, and then a guard, be it Butler, Kyrie, maybe a third mystery guy, or plus Kristaps, that is good enough to contend in the East immediately. And if he wants to have the LeBron type of, oh, you didn't give me credit for these championships, you gon' give me credit for this one. The Knicks didn't have the Cavs drought, but the Knicks ain't won a title since 73. Like, they have this great history that's more mythology than actual history. And so, yes, of course this is a real thing.
See, as someone who's a fan of the Knicks, you know this team very mm-hmm. well. What would it do for the NBA for the Knicks to get someone like KD, maybe someone else, and have a little relevance again back?
Well, first we got to give, you know, James Dolan a little bit of credit. He takes a beating, and the reason why is because when he hired Scott Perry, he told him, you can be patient in trying to build this. Scott Perry took over the team last year as a general manager. We saw their star and Kristaps get hurt, and they're going to take their time as far as him coming back. And Kristaps and his ability to be able to stay there in New York is also going to be a drawing card for Kevin Durant or another superstar. I just know in talking with the people at the Knicks in 2019, they're going big game hunting. And just like it's not Magic Johnson going after him, but Scott Perry has strong relationships in the basketball community. Some of those other things that Chris Haynes pointed out, very, very intriguing. Man, we haven't heard anything about Kevin Durant's dad.
No.
Oh, his dad being a Knicks fan, the ability to be able to resurrect somewhere, and then also listen to the messaging from Durant, what he said recently. Oh, I'm going to let you know the reason why this time, and it's a legitimate. I got business in New York. It's the mecca of basketball. If he could revive that, it would be LeBron-ish. It would be great for the NBA, you know, for Kevin Durant. I believe there's a few spots.
Why would it be great for the NBA?
Because some certain teams matter more than others. And even though the Knicks haven't earned it on the court, they matter more than others. If we had a situation where you have LeBron wearing a Lakers uniform, Durant wearing a Knicks uniform, the Celtics super relevant even if Kyrie leaves because of all their young talent, the Philly doing what they're doing, those are four of your five most important franchises in the sport.
Yeah, I just think it's very intriguing when you have another superstar like KD that's going to attract a certain amount of attention. I know it's the market, but it's about the balance. Right now, we have too many of the great players in the West. We have too many great we have more better teams in the West. The balance of the NBA. We were worried about this a couple years ago. Then we saw LeBron go to the West. We're talking about, hey, man, we got to change the seating in the playoffs. We need a player like Kevin Durant to be able to come back to the East. And if Kyrie stays there in Boston, they're a juggernaut. He's going to get someone else there in Knicks. You got Kristaps there with him. So you already have two unicorns. I mean, you're talking about two guys 7-foot-ish shooting the ball away. I believe that could be a special place. In Golden State, it's still going to be special.
It'd be back to just being the Splash Brothers. All that team did was win a title and then win 73 games. Like, because Steph's not going anywhere, I don't believe Klay's going anywhere. Go ahead, Jen.
Who would you like to see ideally matched up with Kevin Durant in New York?
Oh, I think KD and Kyrie in the Mecca would be dope. I think it would be exciting to watch. I think their styles of basketball play well together. You have Kristaps there as well. Like, Jimmy Butler is an excellent player, and you can make the argument that on both the when you incorporate the defensive end of the ball, mm-hmm. some would argue Butler's better than Kyrie. But as far as an aesthetically pleasing brand of basketball, Kyrie and KD playing together in New York would be fantastic. Now, again, I want to circle back some Chris Haynes said, because if people aren't as dialed in as The thing about Rich Kleinman's real. Kevin Durant, Rich Kleinman is not just Kevin Durant's business partner. They're launching a television series together. They do podcast series together. Rich Kleinman has helped make Kevin Durant maybe almost as much money off the court as Durant has made on the court. Their partnership is very important. So it's not just like, oh, you know, an agent has a relationship. These guys are actual, real partners. So that was a very important point Chris Haynes made. And that you're right about the dad thing. I never heard any. I've heard a lot about Mama Durant. Mm-hmm. I've never heard a mumbling word about Kevin Durant's father. So that was an interesting aspect I had not heard and I had not considered.
And San Francisco's great. What Golden State got going on is great. But it's not Los Angeles. Now, you got LeBron and potentially Kawhi in Los Angeles. To me, the next logical move, given everything that KD has, would be a move like New York. Like, that would be it, and then I can get Nick Wright to apologize, and him and KD can, can mend it
I
up.
I ain't got nothing to apologize for.
Nice.
And then we bring it right here to the city.
Uh-huh.
I like
him,
it.
You and Durant, you have a little cocktail at your spot.
Yeah, the Nick
in Harlem.
Up in Red Rooster, me, Durant, and Kyrie.
Yeah.
They're already
chopping
getting
it
drinks.
Up.
Uh-huh. Got to take a break. Coming up next, back to football. Will Patrick Mahomes' hot start come to a screeching halt against the Jaguars' defense? Next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, Super Bowl champ Chris Canty is with us. Chris,
good
you're
morning,
a happy
Jenna.
Guy today. Your Yankees won last night.
Absolutely, big win. Now we're getting ready for the series up in Boston, the ALDS, and all of a sudden, starting to feel real good about my Yankees. I was a little nervous about the wild card game. Now that we put that to bed, I feel like this team can compete with anybody in a real series.
Fall in New York with the Yankees and Red Sox is about as good as it gets.
Hadn't happened in 15 years.
Yep.
No doubt about it.
So
oh, happy belated birthday, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Very
I know
nice
I'm late to the party, but
here
you go.
Party.
Chipotle.
Chipotle gift card.
Oh, I'm a whole
you know,
lot
had
that
to,
right
I,
there.
You know,
that is nice.
Appreciate you, brother.
Go number 7 and never gave you anything.
Absolutely.
I love it. Awesome.
Don't say we ain't never gave you nothing. Get out of here with that mess. Leave my dude alone.
Let's talk some football, Chris Canty. The young quarterback who impressed you the most this season with all the big-name rookies in play is not, in fact, a rookie. I'm going to go ahead and put words in your mouth and say that the guy you're most impressed with has to be Patrick Mahomes. He's thrown 14 touchdowns with zero picks over the last 25 seasons. Only one other quarterback has done that. Guy by the name of Peyton Manning in 2013 with the Denver Broncos. Bill Polian, the exec who drafted Peyton Manning, had some strong words about Mahomes.
What has he got working for him? The arm and release of Marino, the escape ability and the field vision of Aaron Rodgers, the accuracy of Aaron Rodgers and Marino, and the inventiveness of Favre. So you're talking rare company there.
If you could be compared in some capacity to Marino, Rodgers, and Favre, you got to be do something. You got to be doing something right. What does Patrick Mahomes need to do against this Jaguars defense to have success this weekend?
Well, I think he's going to need to show all the skill sets that he's shown to this point in the season through the first 4 weeks. I mean, you've seen the accuracy and velocity on display. Remind you of Marino, that throw that he had to Travis Kelce up the seam in the first quarter against the Steelers game, putting it on the back shoulder of your tight end, keeping him away from the safety. That's a big-time throw. When we saw on Monday night, being able to improvise, being able to throw the ball with his left hand because he couldn't square his shoulders and throw it with his right when Von Miller was chasing him, rolling out to his left. Or how about on second and 30, being able to throw that 23-yard pass to DeMarcus Robinson. Those are those off-schedule plays that we see from Aaron Rodgers. So when you start talking about those quarterbacks and comparing them, you can actually point to specific plays and see those attributes on display. So Pat Mahomes is going to have to bring a lot of that against this Jacksonville Jaguars defense because they get after it like no other defense will. To me, personnel-wise, the best defense in the National Football League. They're the number one scoring defense in the National Football League. So this is going to be the first big test for that Kansas City Chiefs offense.
And he set the record for the last decade on passing yards outside of the pocket in that Monday Night Football game. That would worry me if that were the path to victory for the Chiefs this weekend. Because the Jags, I think, are better equipped because of that personnel than any other team in the league to keep him in the pocket, and they are just as well equipped as any team in the league to do damage to his body if he leaves the pocket and tries to do what he has been so successful at. Now, I'm not saying he would eliminate that from his game entirely, but this is a game where, A, Kareem Hunt is going to have to be the 2-1-2 punch, and B, on Mahomes' side, he's going to have to dial it up from the pocket. Now, he's been great inside the pocket. Just so many of his highlights have been on the escapability plays, on the plays running around.
I'm going to address, not necessarily against the Jags defense, but what Bill Polian, what he was talking about. Because Dan Marino's my guy, man. Dan Marino was in college, recruited me to go to Pitt. Man, I wanted to go to Pitt. It was after Dan was going to be gone. John and I end up being good friends. So I've been knowing Dan for so many years. And people just forget. People think about Dan Marino. They talk about he's got a strong arm. But Dan was so accurate. Dan was one of the first guys that would hit you in stride. Dan Fouts before him, then Dan Marino. Yards after the catch became very big. Then Dan had knee injuries and Achilles injury. So Dan, he lost his mobility. But his accuracy, he didn't lose that in the pocket. So when Bill Polian throws these types of names and makes comparisons, Bill Polian, man, he's my Hall of Fame buddy. Bill Polian does not give out compliments like that. He is not walking down the hallway and you get a compliment and you get a compliment and you get a compliment. I just think it's really important that we emphasize who this is, a Hall of Fame general manager who one day had to make that decision between Ryan Leaf and Peyton Manning, and it was not a no-brainer. I know one of them's career went this way. We know Ryan Leaf, a friend of the show, what he went through. But in that, he did make the critical decision, and he did choose the right guy. He's in the hall for picking talent. So when someone starts to say things like that, either I look to try to tear it apart or I try to look to gain some credibility when what he said. That's what we're looking at with Dan Marino when he partnered with one of the greats in Don Shula. And that's what we believe, that he's getting there with Andy Reid. I know Andy Reid, people talk about his game management. People talk about his lack of overall playoff success. But look what he's done when he's gotten a quarterback. And look at the type of offenses that he's run with even mediocre or less than talented quarterbacks. So for me, I think that it's really important to highlight Bill Polian as a Hall of Fame talent picker. This is what he says about Patty Mahomes.
Well, the one thing that Polian really was focused on were his attributes for Patrick Mahomes. Accuracy, velocity, improvisation, that ability to do all those things. What doesn't he do well besides sustainability? Besides, can he do this over a period of time? Besides, can he help his team win when they are down and all of it? What else does he have to do?
Well, I think he's going to have to see a lot more football. I mean, it's impossible for Pat Mahomes to have all the answers because he's only got 5 regular season starts. Mm-hmm. So he's got to get that experience. But I think he's passed every test thus far. And when you saw what the Denver Broncos did in their game plan, they didn't give him the first read in that game for the majority of the game. He had to go off script, and you saw him do that in that fourth quarter. So I think that was a big hurdle for him to get past. Now with this Jacksonville Jaguars defense, I'm agreeing with Nick on this one. I think the offense has to go through Kareem Hunt, and I think Pat Mahomes has to win from the pocket just because of the athleticism of that defense. I don't know if I want him living outside of the pocket against this group of guys. If you look at the Jacksonville Jaguars, they typically struggle when they have an offense that has balance. When they're able to run the football, that's when that defense struggles. So, I mean, I don't necessarily want to go into this game and become a one-dimensional offense because I think you create opportunities for that Jacksonville Jaguars defense to be opportunistic and create turnovers.
What we want to see moving forward, Jenna, and Canty's saying this, we want to see some patience. He showed that in the Denver game. Sammy Watkins injured in the game, put in someone to replace him. Kelsey, not a great first half. Didn't get him the football. Second half, he became the featured part of that offense. So spreading the ball around, wherever the defense is going to allow him to throw it. Young quarterbacks don't do that well. So he needs to do the same thing that we need to do with Patty Mahomes. We need to be patient with him, too. Because, yes, Bill Polian, he's right. But let's be patient. I remember Marino in his first year, Rodgers in his first year. Like, let's be patient and allow him the same thing he's got to do when going against one of the best defenses. Be patient. Let the game come to him. We know he's put up tremendous numbers, but just let the flow of the game come to him, and I think that we're going to see him grow. And he's a special, special football player.
And the reason why Pat Mahomes right now is a great story, but not always a great topic long form for shows like this, is the only criticism that exists right now is hasn't done it long enough. And he hasn't had the opportunity to.
Yeah.
I've watched every throw he's made in his career. It's not like there's a bunch of, oh, that should have been picked. That could have been picked. Got lucky there. Not a whole bunch of, oh, his receiver bailed him out there. It is high velocity, high degree of difficulty, pinpoint accurate throws made under duress very often. And he's doing it against Monday night on the road. National television, Von Miller and Bradley Chubb there. He did it in a game against the Steelers where he had to match him score for score. Like, everything he's been asked to do, he's done with flying colors.
And I remember a lot like Bill Polian, and I have to go back to a guy, and it's Randy Moss. Because I remember, because Denny Green said, Chris, who is he? I said, man, he's a combination. He's Jerry Rice when he catches the ball. He's James Lofton with the deep speed. He's also Lynn Swann. Like, he's like, Lynn Swann? I was like, yeah, he plays well off the ground when the ball's in the air. And Denny Green, Denny believed me, but other people, they thought I was just saying stuff just to be saying stuff. But that's who Randy Moss was. He was a combination of some of the greatest receivers that we ever. And at this point in his career, I still had to tell people, he's going to get better. Patty Mahomes is going to get better. So I like the fact Bill Polian pointed out those great players that we've seen, even modern day. And this is just the beginning.
And that's, by the way, real quick on that, that is an important point, because everyone says defenses are going to catch up. They're going to get more film. That's all true. Mm-hmm. But it's not as if he's not going to continue
right.
to improve.
He as well is
so
going
while
to
the
improve.
Defense continues to get film and
he's
information
gonna see more
on him,
defenses
he's going to exactly. improve as well, even if the numbers, I mean, I don't think he's going to have 56 touchdowns and zero picks, which is what he's on pace for, but
who
he's
knows?
A quarter of the way there.
Yeah, only weakness, Jen, is his voice. I'm going to set up something. I'm going to set up something and kill that frog he's got in his throat and everything. The only weakness he's got is his voice, well, not real
frog
real.
Situation.
No, I think in a couple years he'll realize he didn't like his haircut.
Oh,
year.
Well, no.
Wow.
Yeah. How
wow.
dare you?
No,
he got
the voice is fine.
Right
oh, he's got your voice. You're right, C. The hair,
the voice,
Jenna, you're the
voice
worst.
Is a real critique.
Stick
the
around,
hair is
Chris
fly.
Candy,
Jenna,
coming
you,
up. Who is Odell Beckham frustrated with? Hear from him next on First Things
Jenna,
First.
Fun.
Back here, First Things First. Chris Candy still with us. Odell Beckham is not happy. It might be because the supposed new look New York Giants currently sit in last place in the NFC East with a 1-3 record. You can point to a number of reasons why: their offensive line, their quarterback play, their receiver production. Well, that last one doesn't sit well with Odell, who's currently 16th in receiving yards and has yet to score a touchdown this season. Let's just say he's a little frustrated.
I don't know. I'm doing everything I can. I put my all into this. I've sacrificed everything, especially coming towards this year. I've sacrificed and made personal changes and done all I can to be the best teammate and bring everything that I can every Sunday. So it's a little disappointing when you have to leave like this. You know, you work way too hard, five, six days a week for 60 minutes of football. So I hate to get out there and waste those 60 minutes. I don't have a Richter scale of, you know, where the frustration level is, but it's definitely frustrating. You know, you put your all in this, like I said, but it's one game we lost. Got to put your hard hat on, go right to work tomorrow.
Chris Kenny, is all that frustration justified? I get it, the team's losing, you know, you're frustrated, but his level of annoyance, I guess, frustration with himself, what do you think?
No, I think OBJ does have a legitimate beef. In an era where we've seen the most passing touchdowns through the first 4 weeks and the most points scored through the first 4 weeks, his offense hasn't scored over 30 points in 36 games. So I can understand why he's frustrated. He's one of the top three receivers in our league. He's a dynamic playmaker, one of the most dangerous weapons that you could have on your team, and yet the Giants can't find a way to get him the ball where he can do some things to help his team win. And so I guess that's where the frustration lies, and you're looking at an offense that tried to retool on the fly. They fixed the offensive line, four new starters from that group from a year ago. They have Sterling Shepard. They have Evan Ingram. They thought that they were going to take the next step when they drafted Saquon Barkley with the second overall pick. Mm-hmm. Yet it hasn't come together like everybody envisioned, and we knew if the Giants were going to have a postseason caliber year, it was going to have to be led by that offense, and they just have not gotten the job done. So I can understand his frustration.
And the offense has been inexplicable in its approach. Saquon Barkley has not gotten three consecutive rushes all year. And not once all year have they handed the ball to Saquon three straight times. We can blame a lot of it in the offensive line. I thought Brian Baldinger of the NFL Network on Twitter, he does these little film breakdowns. He has some really good examples of them. You're not a fan? Okay, fair enough. But there's some of Eli bailing out early as opposed with a clean pocket. And where is Odell as far as the league and production? Well, yeah, he's 16th in yards, but every receiver in the top 40, wide receiver in the top 40 in yards, has a play 30 yards or longer. Odell's waiting for his first longer than 30 yards. He's the only receiver, he and Julio, in the top 40 that are yet to score a touchdown. I don't think it's because he's gotten worse. I do wonder this. See, you said yesterday about the importance of Julian Edelman bringing the juice, bringing the passion to an offense. That had been Odell's job. Odell was told to chill out on everything, and he has chilled out on everything. And I don't – and now we can – maybe those are correlation, not causation, or causation, not correlation, but He has not been the same, and the offense has been as bad as ever.
Well, I'm not gonna accept that as an answer. That was with the last regime. This regime has not told him to chill out, has not told him anything. He's got free reign. As you can see on the sideline, them sideline shots, he's still the same guy. Mm-hmm. But he's got the money now.
Yep.
You know, the one thing about wide receivers you need to know, the one stat that we watch in wide receivers are touchdowns and catches. Jerry Rice, Michael Irvin, all of us, man, we get together now. We talk about when we were in the prime of our career, how me being on the East Coast or playing mostly in Eastern or Central time zone, Michael Irvin watching the game. He used to tell his wife, Sandy, Chris had 8 for 120. I got to have a big day today. Jerry Rice, the same thing. Used to watch the games early, see somebody go off and be like, I got to be able to match that productivity. I didn't even know that until later in my career after we had retired and everything. And they used to talk about it. I've been like, wow, great. I wasn't weird because I was watching you guys. I was watching your numbers and everything. So now we're in an era where we're throwing the ball more than ever. If you think OBJ doesn't know that, yes, he knows that. He should be frustrated even if he had 50 catches and 5 touchdowns. Because in this business, you are paid to win. Mm. You're not paid to play the game. So you're going to – a lot of guys – OBJ's been in this league 4 years. You still don't understand pro football. Pro football is a grind. It's not a bunch of highlights and lowlights. It's a grind. It's every day coming there and trying to get better. So he should feel responsible. The great players – they should talk about themselves as far as playing better. He shouldn't look at the offensive line. He shouldn't look at Eli. So I can understand why he'd be frustrated. There's a lot of guys in the league frustrated, but that's part of being a professional football
player.
But
he can't throw the ball to himself.
No.
He can't draw up the plays and be in the right place at the right time always. Can't you put a lot of this on Eli Manning?
Well, this is the old Leon can't do everything. But when everybody looks at this offense and they're saying, okay, we're tired of complaining about the offensive line. It is what it is. Who's the next person to blame? I think it's Eli Manning. But if you look at what's happened to Eli over the course of the last several seasons, those hits that he's been taking in the pocket, they're accumulative. So Eli is at a point now in his career where he's starting to see ghosts a little bit, and he understands that he's got to get the ball out of his hands because he knows the 5 guys in front of him consistently break down in pass protection. So you can blame Eli Manning, but there's a front office that put an immobile quarterback in this situation. So maybe this is the sins of Jerry Reese coming back to haunt this organization. But the reality is the skill set that your quarterback has can't overcome the deficiencies that you have on the offensive side of the ball. If you don't have time to push the ball downfield and to exploit a suspect Saints secondary, that's not on the quarterback. That's on the offensive line. There's a reason why Eli Manning leads the league in sacks with less than 2.5 sacks.
Wait, no, I can't deal with this anymore. I'm sorry. The streak's 36 games, right?
Yep.
Offensive line played 36 straight bad games. They had the same offensive line 36 straight games.
Yep.
Come on.
It's been a really bad offensive line, Nick.
Eli
it's been
Manning
a really
gets,
bad. There is no good scheme for a bad offensive line.
Okay.
There isn't.
Okay. Yeah. The one consistent over this 36, 37, if we include the playoff game, streak of not 30 points is the quarterback. That's the one consistent. Odell's been in and out with injury. They had Saquon. They didn't have Saquon. The offensive line, they've changed left tackle. They've changed right tackle. They draft a guard. We see teams with awful offensive lines find ways to score points every week in this league. Every week. I understand.
Outside of New England, who?
Houston. Seattle. But for the years in Seattle.
You have quarterbacks that can run, Nick. This Giants organization knows that they don't have a quarterback that's mobile.
Okay, first, let's go back to this. It's hard to be productive. It's hard when you don't have an offensive line. And you play behind a bad offensive line. Those characteristics, they continue to rub off on you. The biggest thing with Eli Manning this year is something neither one of you are yelling about. Offensive coordinator's brand new. As long as Eli's been playing this game, you take a new offense coordinator and put him in Green Bay. Watch Aaron Rodgers. Watch you start to see some stuff. You put a new offense coordinator with Tom Brady. The reason why Tom is so successful is part of it is the continuity between system, 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 players, players, player. Eli doesn't have that. So now he just, you can complain about his quarterback play, but he just got a new offensive coordinator. We saw Matty Ice 2 years ago when they went to Sark after Shanahan left. We saw him struggle with the new terminology. So that's a real thing. The offensive line, that's a real thing. And I don't see offenses that are very, very productive like you that do not have a decent offensive line. Russell Wilson, leading the NFL in sacks. Deshaun Watson, all right, he's a special, special talent. Could he be able to do that in New York? That's what he would be up against. So OBJ has an opportunity to try to be able to lead this team. I believe he's doing things in the right way, all right? On the sidelines, he's got just as much energy. We can make excuses for him. But that offensive line is a real, real problem.
I don't think anyone is arguing the offensive line isn't bad. I think it Eli's the only quarterback that I'm familiar with that when the team for 2.5 years has struggled on offense, we always, yeah, but the quarterback. It's one of your big complaints about these types of shows, see, is we spend too much time on the quarterback. And I will acknowledge
that.
We do. That's fine. I get that there are 53 guys, but there is also a reason that we all acknowledge it's the most important position in sports.
It's also the easiest way to bail out. It's easier for people to talk, and especially people who don't watch a lot of film about football, to blame it on the quarterback. They have multiple problems within the Giants organization. And this offseason, them drafting Barkley didn't change that. And if they had drafted Darnold, he would be getting whacked around. So to say that they made the wrong pick, no, they made the right pick. Go with the running back because you believe in the quarterback. But no quarterback wants to get hit, all right? No wide receiver wants to get hit. No quarterback wants to get hit, and that's real. The cumulative effect is for on Eli, that's what we're starting to see. We can't expect Eli to be spectacular throwing behind this offensive line. And that new offensive coordinator, if we're not going to acknowledge that, we're missing a huge part of football right now and people being familiar with the system that they're in.
The offense is just not going to be consistent because they're not getting consistent play up.
It's incredibly consistent. It's bad every week.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.